Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money, and today we're doing a seance for the market to continue going back up in price. We've ripped it this last this last week. We are up a few percent. It's a
yeah, we'll take what
it's
we
a change
get.
Of pace. And I think Tattooed Chef is actually up this week. Is that that's a first, right?
Yes, that's a first probably in the whole company's history, the whole stock's history. So we'll take it. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Is the market up like 6% right now, or?
I think it's been up five
last week.
From the very bottom, the S&P's up about 5%.
You guys think it's going to last, or what's going to happen?
Yeah, they're talking about a ripper rally coming in June, baby. So
A ripper rally.
So one, maybe potentially oversold conditions. A lot of shorts are very heavily shorted right now. And there's going to be a rebalancing of about $250 billion into the stock market during the month of June. I don't know when that money's supposed to hit, but that's what JP Morgan's saying. And it's basically just funds having to reallocate from like bonds into stocks, essentially, because they always have to like reallocate funds. You know, sometimes it's from stocks to bonds. This time it's from bonds to stocks.
Why June?
That's just the time period that it's supposed to happen, according to JP Morgan. So,
JP Morgan says it.
Because they say so.
It's probably $250 billion out, and then we're probably going to have another crash tomorrow.
Actually, I recently just read somewhere that JP Morgan was saying that Bitcoin was undervalued, which is surprising.
28% undervalued.
Surprising for some guy who's like, Bitcoin's stupid.
JP Morgan figured out they could make money trading Bitcoin. Now they're like, oh, yeah, Bitcoin's cool, man.
That's right.
That's true. In crowd.
What do you think the odds are of Jamie Dimon owning Bitcoin?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he has at least a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
He could buy. Bitcoin. Yeah, and he could buy it on our sponsor, FTX US. But more on them later. imagine him going and buying on FTX. Like he doesn't even buy through his own.
He uses our code.
Yeah, MMFTX down below. He's watching the video, be like, I got to download this and get all the way up to $100 of free crypto.
I get free Dogecoin. What?
You know what? Knowing him, he'd probably trade more than $10 too.
he could get free
and
a lot
get
of
a
stuff.
Free coin. Him. Yeah. If he did more than $10.
Right. But I saw they said that. But then there was a Guggenheim analyst who also said that the bottom was going to be 8,000 for Bitcoin.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
So I feel like you could look at 10 analysts. They're all going to say something different, but one of them is going to be right. And then they're going to say, but look, I was right this time and listen to me the next time.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and also Bank of America CEO last week, because they had the Davos conference where the rich elite meet.
Which can we explain to the audience? Because I actually had to look that up the first time I heard about it. I was like, oh, yeah, what is this conference? And I was thinking about making a video about it.
Yeah.
But the Davos, can you explain that?
That's like the 1% of the 1% meet up there. Business leaders, thought leaders from all over the world. The most elite of the elites pretty much meet up in Davos. And obviously like crews like CNBC and those publications are invited. And they'll interview a lot of like tech CEOs. And
did you see, I think that I read an article that somewhere that they had like some ritualistic shamans there. Did you see that?
I don't know what goes on there, man.
Like legit, so, that was.
I don't know.
Interesting.
You need one of those at your house. that'll help. Yeah.
Pray for my silver to go up.
Yeah. All right. The emergency fund.
Too soon.
All right.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where the world leaders come together.
Yeah.
Right? And
Bank of America CEO also was saying he's super bullish. People have a lot of money in their accounts. There's going to be no recession anytime soon.
Okay.
And so when you hear, you know, JP Morgan CEO and Bank of America CEO say it's good, like you start assuming it's got to be bad, man.
Right. So that was the overwhelming consensus, you're saying, is they walked away saying there's not going to be a recession. Everything's going to be great.
But then you got the different crowd of you know, the Super Bubble folks, maybe Jeremy Grantham and the others that, that feel like, oh no, we got a lot more pain ahead.
Right.
So I know Jeremy Grantham, I believe he thinks the S&P 500 is going down another 25 percentage points from here, which obviously would be pretty darn devastating.
Well, do you remember when people used to make fun of Warren Buffett for having like $150 billion in
cash? Oh, yeah.
He's probably laughing right now.
Yeah. He's done quite well these last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been putting some money to work recently in the market, which is interesting. He's put more money to work in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 months than he'd put probably in the last 2 years, if not the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so we'll see what happens. But I know Bitcoin ran up to, I think it was 31K last night, was it? Yeah.
I think it hit 32.
32? Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now this Terra Luna, where are we at in the Terra Luna drama? Because then all of a sudden I heard there was another Terra Luna rebirth.
Yeah, 2.0. Yeah. Right.
What happened? What is?
Are
that
you familiar
about?
With that, Andre? Or I'll speak as much as I know about it. Yeah. I'm not too familiar with it, but my understanding is for those that were in the original Terra Luna, they did an airdrop, which basically just means they'll send you coins.
Okay.
And so far, I think it's down. It dropped like 60% almost instantly.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's failing. I mean, it doesn't seem like it would be too I mean, it's obvious. It's just not gonna.
Yeah, there was a debate about doing it into a hard fork, I guess, which is right where the chain splits. And they were like, no, let's just do a new Genesis block, which is like the creation of a whole new coin. And they did away with the stablecoin aspect. So it's exactly like it was before, but it's only Luna now, right? So it's just only that part, and there's no stablecoin behind it. And I think Graham is right. I think it's down like 60 to 80% pretty much the
moment it launched.
Who would
trust it, though? I don't get that.
I don't know who's trusting it. But I just feel like people are like, you know what? Let me just throw in $100 because who knows? It could 100x from here.
It's a lot of people throwing in $100, though.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Jeez. It's insane. It's, man, how much did they lose? $40 billion. Can you imagine that? $40 billion. Yeah. They also raised $3 billion in funding, though.
Wow.
Which, I mean, can you imagine how confident the market was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, what was it, like a few days later, a week later, Tether started to fall, right? Which that fell to, what was it, 88 cents or something like that? Didn't Tether fall?
Was it 87? I don't...
Yeah,
somewhere
like
it
that.
Was somewhere on there, but it rebounded pretty quickly, and so far it's pretty much back to a dollar. It's like point...
Okay.
9999. It's just under a dollar, basically. Yeah. But obviously, you have the concerns with Tether as well. Is it actually backed?
Yeah.
But people have been saying this for years. I remember 2017, people were saying the same thing. Oh, it's not backed. It's going to pop any day now. And here it is still. So I worry the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to be if it does come out that it's not appropriately backed. We're not going to find out until we see a flash crash in Bitcoin. There's got to be some devastating event that causes Bitcoin to drop to like below 20. Instantaneously, people cash out of Tether. Maybe if they suspend withdrawals for even a moment, people are going to lose their faith.
Yeah.
I will say the thing I learned from the whole collapse is that when it comes to interest rates, and I'm sure you guys have seen it in the DeFi space where they're like, we're paying you 30% interest.
Oh, yeah.
You have to understand where that interest is coming from. Because if it's coming from lending those coins out, that's a different story than, say, if the foundation itself is paying for that interest. Mm. Because Luna... It hit a total value locked, like TVL, of $17 billion. They were paying people 20% on the Anchor protocol, which is like the separate platform where you could stake your money. But at 20%, a $17 billion value, that means they have to pay $3 billion a year to their users to sustain that platform.
Whoa.
So could you imagine how much money? Like, of course they would run out eventually. So first and foremost, you have to understand where your interest is coming from.
I think a lot of people thought, though, that that's just the cost of marketing, and eventually they're going to have to wean it down, and you know, maybe it's not 20%, maybe they do 12%, and that's sustainable, and then 8%. A lot of banks did that. They would offer, you know, 5% interest up to the first $10,000, and that was very much legit, but it's just a cost of marketing. Like, instead of spending money in advertising, you'll just give it back to the customer.
Mm-hmm. Right, but they did dwindle down to, I believe, 1 month worth of funds. So at that point, I think the writing was on the wall at that point.
Now, do you guys have any money in stable coins?
I don't, but I considered it. Remember, I think I brought it up here on Millennium Money.
Yep.
I wanted to take out 80% equity out of my house because it's just cash. It's just sitting there. It's not a productive asset. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me take out 80% so I'm not going to pay the PMI, put it into, I don't know, USDC, get my 10%. That's enough to pay my loan.
Yep.
And it's enough to make some money on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, thankfully, USDC hasn't crashed or anything. But if anything, this whole thing just taught us that nothing is guaranteed.
For sure.
So I'm glad that I didn't do that.
And are folks still paying the crazy rates on USDC, or is that drop way
They're
down?
Still paying 10%.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep.
I would say most range between 8 and 10, mm-hmm. maybe okay. 7 and 10. Doesn't seem to be any cracks yet, but there's always a chance that like one thing goes wrong.
Yeah.
That would be an emergency fund, Jeremy. Yeah. try that.
Yeah.
You should. I think for you, like putting 10, 20K into a stablecoin and just, you could make a video about it.
Yeah.
About your experiences on that.
Well, technically you did, but not a stablecoin. You put money into Voyager.
Oh. Yeah, VGX. That's VGX. Horrible.
The opposite of a, that's a destable coin.
Oh my God. Yeah, unstable coin.
The only thing worse than silver.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dang VGX, man. That
But DeFi platforms, man, let me tell you, they go up to like crazy percent. I think I've seen like 90%, something crazy.
Isn't that investing in like a liquidity pool?
Basically that's what you're doing.
So for those that are unaware, you basically stake your cryptocurrency into a pool where people could interchange that with other currencies. And by locking it up, you get like a small transaction fee every time someone trades A for B. So you could make that if there's a lot of transaction volume. But generally, if they pay such high rates, other people are going to come in too. They're going to offer their liquidity as well. And the more liquidity is there, the less they have to pay. So it's in proportion. So if you buy something obscure, you could make a lot of money, but the risk is that the value of your currency, if it's cryptocurrency A, could plummet 95% while it's tied up in a liquidity pool earning you 30%. So there's always going to be a risk. You can't make 90% without as equal of a risk.
Right. If the underlying asset goes to zero, then it doesn't matter what your interest rate is if the thing you bought goes to zero.
Right.
Speaking of, I was going to start my own liquidity pool, or just going to throw money into like a pool, like a literal pool. It's going to be like, where's this liquidity pool? And I'm just showing them a literal pool, stacks of money inside of it. It's my liquidity pool, guys.
Could just be water. That way it's liquid.
It's liquid, yeah. It's liquid.
That reminds me of my favorite show as a kid. The only cartoon I probably ever watched was
Scrooge McDuck.
Yes, yeah, and dude. He jumps in the gold.
Swims around in that. Yeah.
Man, somebody tested that theory, if that's even possible to swim. No. I mean, they didn't actually literally test it, but yeah, you would die. You'd just break your neck.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
In the show, it looks so cool. Now, do you guys, when it comes to Bitcoin, do you do automatic recurring buys?
I do.
Yeah.
You do. Okay.
Yeah.
So
FTX allows you to do automatic recurring buys.
I noticed that. That's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
And you can use our link. That is going to be the first link in the description down there to do recurring buys. So if you want to buy $12 of Bitcoin every week or Ethereum or whatever it is, you can set it up. It's very easy to do. It's amazing.
And Sam Bankman-Fried is also planning to give away 99% of his personal wealth to charity. He's partnered with Jeremy LaFave, Tom Brady, Steph Curry, Coachella, the Miami Heat Arena. And if you want to be a part of them as well, the link is down below in the description. You could use the code MMFTX and you get all the way up to $100 of free crypto depending on how much you trade, as well as free crypto on every single trade over $10. They've been a huge supporter of the Millennial Money podcast. So if you want to give it back, the link is down below in the description. Really helps us out a lot. How much are you buying, Andre?
I have a automatic buy daily for $1,000 a day.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you actually? $1,000 a day. Just Bitcoin?
Just Bitcoin.
Yeah. How much is the position worth overall?
Overall? Like 11 Bitcoins ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's not bad.
Thought it was more.
No, you're like at 10 or 11. We're like the same.
Yeah. Yeah, about the same. Yeah, that's why I'm surprised.
That's
because
like
I feel
somebody asked your net worth and you're like, oh, I thought it was more.
Yeah.
That's
it? That's burn. That's all? Yeah, no, honestly, I just thought it was more because you've been.
Sneeze and I make that.
Because you've been buying for such a long time. Like, I feel like I've been getting in really for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And my cost basis is like 30, like 30, 29, 30, 31, somewhere around there. So like I'm basically even on the Bitcoin, but I thought because you've held for, such a long time.
Yeah. Do you know what your Ethereum position is?
Gosh. I mean, I bought in a good chunk, like 16, 15, 18. I think that skewed it, but I also was buying at 26.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know offhand.
You know how many you own?
Oh, how many Ethereum?
Yeah.
It's under 100.
Okay.
think 80, 90. I wanted it to get to 100. Yeah, it's under 100 though.
Okay.
Yeah, he told me as soon as he gets more than you, he's kind of done buying.
Whatever you buy, I'll just buy a little bit more.
Yeah, he wants one extra Ethereum, one extra Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why I don't have as much Bitcoin as Graham thought, because I have more Ethereum than he does.
Ooh.
Oh, do you really? How much Ethereum do you have?
I don't know, like 130.
That's it?
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
When he said he had 100, man. It was only in his FTX US
account. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Oh, which account? Yeah, that matters.
Oh, you didn't specify.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jeremy, how much crypto do you have?
Oh, me? I have a good amount. You know, I have a good amount. I have tens of thousands of dollars in crypto.
And Jeremy's about to be like, I have tens of dollars.
I really do have tens of thousands of dollars in crypto. Okay. I really do.
It's just
do
not
have
a Bitcoin
Ethereum. One whole Bitcoin yet.
No, sir.
This is unacceptable. Do you have one whole Ethereum?
No.
Jeremy, you really should. I'm telling you, man. As far as somewhat like as a good way to diversify, you should buy one Bitcoin, one Ethereum.
I'm planning on
like, non negotiable.
Okay, listen. To my defense, under $35,000. To my defense, the stock market for like the first 5 months this year has been like this. So what, like all my buying power has gone to stocks because that's always my preference, right? And so—
But you gotta diversify.
It's a good way to diversify, especially it's such a small amount. Like we're talking stocks, a $35,000 investment, 35 grand, that is down more than 50% from the peak.
Yeah.
So you're buying 50% off from the very top.
It's just, I mean, when some of these stocks are at some of these prices they're at, like some of these stocks I can't even imagine. It would be like Bitcoin being at the equivalent of like 8K right now, and me being like, Andre, why aren't you buying, you know, this stock?
Here's a good question. Andre, what do you think? What do you think is going to be worth more 10 years from now? Bitcoin?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll just end there. Bitcoin. All right, fine. Yeah, I believe Bitcoin too. Yeah. I think over 10 years, Bitcoin is more potential. I mean, the truth is Bitcoin could also be worth nothing. I mean, there's always a chance it could be 90% just drop. And who
it's
knows
always going to be worth something because there's always going to be a certain amount of people that give it value. And it's not like Bitcoin can go bankrupt, you know, like a company could, you know, where if a company did really bad, like they eventually could just go bankrupt. Bitcoin will always be worth something because even if Bitcoin was replaced with some better thing that everybody was all into, even then, like still a certain amount of people are going to want to own Bitcoin.
I think
just like all cryptos.
Like at this point, Jeremy, after 10 years, something would have already replaced it considering how fast crypto and tech moves.
I don't think
anything's going to replace it as better.
Okay. I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people said that about AOL too.
That's true.
Or Yahoo. Nothing's going to replace AOL.
Yeah, and when eBay was running the show, nothing could be bigger than eBay. Yeah. eBay in the 90s was way bigger than Amazon. And then eBay's like here and Amazon's like.
Pets.com is invincible.
Here's what I'll say. Yeah. I think Bitcoin will be closer to 500,000 in 10 years than it will be to zero.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet.
That's a safe bet?
I think it's a much safer bet. Yeah, because at the end of the day,
what's going to give you that kind of a return right now? What is that?
Yeah.
The
question is, does it get that type of return? But your question was, I mean, what you just stated there, it's been to be closer to 500K than zero.
Yeah. So, I mean, that means it's going to be 251, let's just say.
Yeah.
Because if it stays the same, it's closer to zero.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people just believe in it. So even if it doesn't take off and like everybody's using it for, you know, transactions, like people just believe in it. And so that's the thing. Like Bitcoin always has that. And that's just diehard community. That's
amazing. Isn't it good to have some sort of community like that behind 100%. It? I know it's fickle, but Tesla, I believe, has a very similar community. Mm-hmm. People who just believe in Elon Musk. They see the vision and they're like, I'm just supporting Tesla.
100%. Yeah, it's powerful.
Whenever I see people do like stock analysis and they're like, well, this company has a huge growth potential with its earnings. It's like, but isn't that some level of faith that you have to have for that company in no way different really than someone who has faith about Bitcoin's market cap? It's kind of similar to me, even though the metrics, I would agree with you, are harder to measure in Bitcoin than have like a, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's when we've always gotten into some spicy debates is like, what makes Bitcoin worth $1 trillion or $500 billion? And so it's always like a debate that you can keep going back and forth on, but like I almost feel like there's no winners in that.
What do you think Bitcoin is going to be 5 years from now?
Oh, 5 years from
now? No, let's say 10.
10 years. Okay, 10 years.
10 years? I would say higher than lower. Let's put it that way. I don't know. Maybe like 100K to 300K.
Okay.
So that's like a 3 to 9x return in 10 years.
Because the thing is, the one thing I worry about is if there is anything with Tether. That's the only thing I worry about. If there is something brewing behind the scenes with Tether that would cause Bitcoin to have this massive crash and no one saw coming. And maybe that doesn't happen. But I mean, for instance, I know CoffeeZilla has done some amazing videos on Tether. You know, and recently I was watching one of his videos. Like, one person, like, out of the Cayman Islands, like, supposedly audited this Tether. It's like, come on, man. You know, it's like, if they were really that open, why not have real accounting
firms? Here's the thing, though. Even if Tether turns out to be some, you know, toxic monster behind Bitcoin, I would rather have that happen sooner, because once it does, the whole fundamental proposition of Bitcoin doesn't change with the fact that Tether, as a tool, was used to pump Bitcoin's price, right?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't change the proposition and value of what Bitcoin's meant to be.
Yeah.
So it's not like if we find out that that is the case and Tether's like this toxic asset, that Bitcoin's gonna just disappear. It's still secure. It's still decentralized. It still fulfills its promise.
Yeah.
So,
but that, let's just say Tether is fraudulent,
sure,
and they are pushing the price up. If that goes kaput, all of a sudden you could have a major buyer just disappear Bitcoin, and that selling pressure, when no one's there to buy, when Tether isn't there to buy it up, could evaporate.
Michael Saylor's always going to be there.
Until he gets margin called.
Margin call, he gets margin called, I believe, at what? When Bitcoin hits like 20 or 21?
Yeah, but then he just has to pledge additional assets to prevent the margin call. So it's not going to be a margin call.
Yeah.
That would be such a... It wouldn't happen.
The two worst and best things I think that could happen to Bitcoin specifically is, one, a actual recession. So because Bitcoin still hasn't really been through a recession, although the 2020 was a recession, I think a lot of people want to see, how does it hold up in an actual recession? Now it's a big asset, right? Because it was birthed in, what, 2009 or so, right? So I think that would be big. And honestly, probably long term, if Tether did turn out to be not so good, I think that would probably be, like you mentioned, Andre, because then you get the boogeyman out of there.
Right.
Right now, Tether is a boogeyman, and then a recession, to see like how Bitcoin would hold up in an actual legit recession where unemployment's climbing and things like that. If you can get those two out of it, I think you can get a lot of fear out of the market.
Well, speaking of boogeymen, I looked at the stock market and I saw this research study that shows that on average, whenever the stock market drops 20% or more, we get what are called relief rallies, right? Or fake rallies.
Yeah.
And they last, apparently, on average, about 2 months. So that tricks investors into thinking, oh, this is the start of the comeback that we've been waiting for. So they put heavily, they start investing, and then the stock market goes down again.
Yep.
So what we could be seeing is just a temporary relief rally for 2 months before the market goes back down again. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying, including some people that are close to me that are getting much more into the short-term activity. Is exactly like, I have a friend, Brian, he thinks that exact way. He's like, oh, we're going to pump in June, probably into July. And he's like, I'm going to probably cash up a bit. And, you know, basically, because he's gone too heavy in the market, he wants to raise some cash. And so he's like, if we pump, man, I'm going to cash some positions. So I think that's the way a lot of people are thinking. Like, this is just kind of a bear market rally.
Right.
Like, we're kind of going through right now, and then it's going to drop lower.
Well, that's what the historic data suggests is going to happen. But I'm just curious from your perspective. I'm not saying anyone should make a decision based on that. But do you think historically that will repeat that, and that's what's going on?
I think if the economy gets much worse, then yes. So I'm talking unemployment go up, I'm talking jobs be lost, I'm talking real estate really to get devastated, then I do believe we're going lower over the next, let's call it 6 to 9 months, right? But if for whatever reason we don't get that recession, we don't get those job losses, then I think we're, I don't want to call us in the clear, but we're in a pretty good position. Because if essentially, the NASDAQ was down like, you know, 31% at the lows last week, right? If you're talking about getting NASDAQ down 40, 50%, you have to have a massive recession come behind that, essentially. Like, you can't just, unless you're talking about the tech bubble, which was a whole different situation. But usually, if you're talking about 40, 50% decline, you have to have massive jobs loss, incomes to go way down, economic devastation.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
Man, I don't know if, like, I agree with that, but I will add that I don't think the stock market is that dependent and connected to the whole economy for it to have a mind of its own. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, I wouldn't be surprised if history repeats itself again and we really are in this false rally where we come back down in about 2 months' time. But to your point, where you said that the stock market could go back up and we could be in the clear if we don't get a recession.
Yeah.
The only other thing is Papa Powell, right? Jerome Powell. If the central bank starts to see, well, things aren't cooling down and we're maybe they start increasing rates beyond 0.5%, maybe 0.75%, in which case that could scare the market and once again fulfill that whole relief rally.
Yeah, that's true. I'm pretty confident that no matter what, and the Fed, the reason the Fed keeps raising rates is because inflation's so high. I'm in the belief that no matter what, inflation, the growth rate is going to continue to fall, you know, month after month after month for basically the next year. And I think even a year from now, I think we're going to be in a very different discussion. I think a lot of people are going to be talking about deflation.
Right.
That could even happen in like 6 months from now, where everybody's going to start worrying about that. Because think about it, like all these retailers have ordered so much inventory, they have way too much inventory. So now those retailers...
Hold on, but is that true for all the companies? Because I know obviously Target, Walmart, but is that across the board though?
Mostly, yeah. There's a few, like Nordstrom had a really good quarter, but that...
Okay, but before we get too into the weeds, can you help explain to the audience, if they haven't fallen asleep yet, how much this inventory thing matters? Like when investors look at like what's going to happen, people look at this thing called obvious inventory. So how much does that really matter?
Yeah, well, first off, my viewers are not asleep right now. Their ears are perked up.
They're on the edge of their seats.
Yeah, they're on the edge of their seat. They're like, we're talking about inventories?
Must be just me then.
No, but essentially what you're talking about is inventory. Like, you know, let's say you're Walmart, right?
Yeah.
You order, 100,000 grills.
Right.
Okay, and only 15,000 grills sell, and you're like, "What the crap, man? No one is buying grills, and now we got an extra 85,000 grills that we shouldn't have." So that's got to stack up in inventory, or you have to try to discount for a really steep price, which can potentially cause deflation, right? And obviously, if you go throughout the entire industry, that's how you can get into deflation cycle where everybody's dropping prices because they're like, "I got to move stuff."
Right.
Now, simultaneously, if this retailer ordered way too many grills, then likely the company that's making those grills hired way too many people to make the grills. Mm-hmm. Those people have to get laid off, right? Because they're not getting those orders coming in now for the grills, because they might not get orders for the grills for another year or two, because now Walmart or whoever has to run through that grill inventory, right? And so you kind of get into this like dominoes falling the wrong way, essentially, where now the company's way overhired, they have to lay off. The retailer's not moving the product they were moving. Maybe they lay off some people or don't give some people some hours. So that's the inventory problem. And it's a pretty wide thing that's happened over the past two quarters specifically. Yeah,
so that's what I was going to say. So now that we understand how inventory ties into how maybe stocks could move, are we 100% sure that this excess inventory exists beyond just the scary thing Walmart said about themselves? Because we know Walmart is like 30% extra inventory, right?
Yeah.
But is that true across tech? Is that true across...
Well, tech doesn't really have inventory, so that's more of like a retail-specific problem.
Correct. That's fair.
Yeah.
Other industries, though.
Yeah.
Do you think that's true for them as well?
Well, with the other industries, let's talk about tech for a moment. The problem with tech has really been growth rates year over year.
Right.
Because they came off these insane growth rates, right?
They just hired everyone.
Yes. Yeah. Like for instance, Amazon. Everybody was forced to be home. Everybody's ordering off Amazon like crazy. Plus, you had stimulus money. Now, this year, you take away the stimulus money, you open back up the world, and Amazon's having such tough comps year over year now, which is what Wall Street looks at. They say, last year, Amazon was growing 30%. This year, they might only grow 10%. Oh my gosh, is Amazon's best days behind it? This company's hardly growing. Everybody freaks out. A lot of people sell. Analysts start bringing down numbers. And then you get into the dominoes falling the wrong way where this analyst brings down numbers. This analyst brings down numbers. So that's what's happened with tech,
right?
Specifically. So they are kind of going through their own bad problem right now. Apple's been doing really good with their numbers. They've been the one to really hold the show together. But I'm really worried about them for the next 6 to 12 months. So I think they're going to run into some
trouble. So that's tech.
Yes.
Where can we, or do you think that that excess inventory problem exists across like every other industry?
Because
I looked into it. And it is a serious problem.
Yeah.
But that was also Walmart and Target's main problem with retail, which is understandable because like you said, they oversupplied themselves during the pandemic. Supply chain problems.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But does that problem exist across the board?
From what I've seen, and somebody that did a great video yesterday that I actually watched last night, Reventure Consulting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
the real estate guy.
A housing guy.
Yeah. His latest video yesterday he put out went through not just Walmart and Target, but a ton of retailers. He went through the SEC reports and he put them all laid out on the screen and exactly how much their inventories climbed. And so it, in retail, it's across the board. It's not like it's just one company.
Right.
And by the way, Target's numbers were even worse than Walmart, which was interesting. So yeah, it seems like that's definitely an issue in retail. We'll see.
But did you see last week, or was it this week? Last week, where Costco reported their earnings. That was really good. Nordstrom, Macy's, Dollar Tree Store, Dollar General. So those were good.
Yeah.
Those beat EPS expectations substantially.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why we got some of that market rally last week.
Yeah. So in terms of like a Nordstrom, because I was looking at this because everybody saw the Nordstrom, and I personally own Nordstrom stock, and the earnings were good. But think about the world we're in right now. Like the amount of people I know that are having weddings right now, like special events, things like that. All that stuff is like going on right now because everybody pushed that back. And so you're going to go get clothes from Nordstrom. Like that's where you're going to go, right? And so somebody like that's very direct beneficiary of like the time we're in right now. But unfortunately, a Nordstrom is like this big and all these other retailers are like this big.
Costco is pretty big.
Yeah. And Costco's numbers were good. They weren't a disaster from what I saw. They were solid, but that Costco's just a freak, man.
So that's what I'm saying. Do you think that there's at least a silver lining, right? Like in Apple, if Apple's holding the tech field up still, if Costco's still kind of holding everything up a little bit. So
yeah.
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out too, because like I see the problem, but I'm like, well, maybe there's a silver lining there. Maybe things aren't as bad because there's other retail giants that are kind of, you know, counter to what we've seen with Walmart and Target. So I don't know. I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I don't know which way the coin's going to flip.
Yeah. I think it depends on the consumer too. Costco has a higher end consumer.
Same with Nordstrom.
Yeah.
$100,000 at minimum, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're very different clientele.
Right.
But let's be honest. Like I always tell you guys, like who runs this freaking economy? It's Walmart and Target customers.
Right.
You know, like the middle class who runs this show.
And but so, that's why I referenced Dollar General Store. Because that one did it good. So
that could be people trading down because they're doing so bad that it's like, I got to go shop at the dollar store, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So that's kind of a little troubling thing.
It's the same items, though. That's that's what I never understood trading down. It's like you're buying the same stuff for cheaper.
Yeah, some people literally can't afford it. So they like, or just in their mind as a consumer, they're like, they look at, even if like, let's say something's at Walmart and it's $3, but you get way like over triple what you'd get at the dollar store. They're like, this thing's a dollar. I'm buying this. So
I still shop at 99 cent stores.
Do you really?
Yeah,
that's
I do.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm not above that.
Isn't it the $1.50 store now?
It's the $1.50
or it's $1.25 store.
No, that's the Dollar General store.
It's the dollar store. The 99 cent store.
Yeah.
It's $1.25.
I know. They must have to keep making things smaller and smaller.
Yeah, that's what I think.
It's like we used to go in for a pack of TikToks. It's like three TikToks individually.
TikToks.
TikToks. I'm sorry.
TikToks. That's awesome.
We got the boomer Jeremy. You got a TikTok.
Boomer. You guys download the new app. It's called TikTac.
Talk Tick. Well, the Talk Tick.
Talk
Toe. Let me add you on Facebook.
TikTok Toe. Oh my God.
Oh, you heard about Facebook?
I'm on there. Add me on there, yeah. Give me a poke.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We could do the big flashing boomer alert.
Dude, the pokes, man. Do they still have those?
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Graham would know. He used to love to poke people.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh
my God.
Favorite pastime.
Well, speaking of, so real estate. You mentioned real estate.
Oh, what's going on with your house, Jeremy?
Yeah.
I got really good news, guys. I have a showing tomorrow.
Heck yeah.
Your first showing?
First showing.
Jeremy, I feel like you should personally be there.
I was thinking about it. That's so funny. No, I'm not going to go.
You know what? Yeah. Go and bake cookies. Have your wife go and bake cookies in the house. They're going to come in and smell freshly baked cookies.
Yeah. You know what's funny? They told me who was coming, and I like looked them up and everything.
Who was it? Or who was it?
Yeah, share their information. What's their name?
I know. Sometimes like, is that I going forget we're in a far? Podcast. They told me who was coming. I had to like look them up and everything.
I mean, if I had one showing, I'd be curious and look them up, right?
It's like my first showing ever in life.
I can't believe you had one showing. I mean, I'd like you to...
Hey, I'll take what I can get.
Could you imagine
a
buyer goes into the house and they're like, "Ah, you know what? I don't know about this house." And they're like, "We got some cookies." And like, "You know what? Sold."
It's you know what it is? When you walk in an open house like that or a showing, it's a whole bunch of things that you could do just to improve the house 1%.
Right.
Like turning on the lights, not going to make a difference, but it's 1% better. Opening the blinds, 1% better. Having the house smell good, 1% better. Cookies, 1% better. You get a whole
where does it
bunch
end?
Of these.
Could you like hire a team of masseuses?
I'm sure it gets to a point. I'm sure he could probably get about 15 to 20% yeah. better.
What's the plural?
With and also a good agent who shows up with a smile, right. who's yeah. there on time. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that you could do.
I remember watching some of those episodes of, I used to be super into that show, Million Dollar Listings, Los Angeles. And I remember for some of those, and I don't know if it was just for the show or whatever.
Just for the show.
It was they would have like a DJ for some of those open house in LA and like
some of those
people
are real.
In the pool, like models and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say that it's rare. Usually you get that if the home is worth more than like 10 to 20 million bucks.
Right.
Okay. Then it's customary to have like, you know, someone for music. I've seen, you know, like a live violinist or live piano player there. I've seen coffee bars, which is really cool. Drinks being served. I've seen that. But a lot of those are just for the show. They'll just go crazy knowing that it's like marketing for them.
Mr. Jeremy, I think we need a quick follow-up because last week we had Pace Morbihan, and he contacted your agent about seller financing. Now, did your agent actually follow up with you and ask you if you were willing to seller finance the home, or did she not?
Yes, sir. Yeah. A few hours later. Yep.
Saw the email.
Jeremy sent the email. Yeah. I have to say, like, huge. Your agent is so good.
Okay, good.
The lady, she is phenomenal. So, like, obviously, I'm not going to give her a shout out here because then it would then you could look up the house. Mm. But at some point, she deserves a lot of recognition for that. She is so like the email she crafted, and she like did research on who the buyer would be.
Oh yeah, she knew. Like, she found out who the buyer was.
Oh wow.
Yeah she knew exactly what it was. She reversed searched him or something.
Yeah, imagine if she looked at his Instagram and saw that he followed you.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. That's a good point. I wonder if she went that in depth.
No, he wasn't following you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah,
okay.
So she did some work on the front end.
Yeah.
To basically give him value in making a decision, hopefully.
Yep. And so, so for anyone who's going to see your house for the first time, she is, in my opinion, the best point of contact for that house.
Okay,
she's
good.
So really good.
Now, so maybe she won customers with you guys. Maybe.
Actually, she's good. The house that I'm in, Graham, is selling right
now
on the market.
He does follow me. I just want to be clear about that.
Not when you sent the picture.
No, because that was from my wife's phone.
Oh.
Yeah, that was from my wife's phone. So.
Wow. So, okay. So anyway, Andre?
Yeah, the house, the community that I'm in right now, they're selling one right now for, I should bleep it out because they could.
Just give a range.
Yeah.
Well, let's say between 1 to 1.4 mil.
And that's in your actual community.
Yeah,
you
the one that
in
I live
now.
In now.
And you bought yours for
730.
But then you put a 150 into it?
Uh-huh. And it's way, and that house that's selling right now, it's not renovated
but
at all.
But here's the thing. Ooh, it's an asking price. Are they going to get an offer?
Right.
Oh, that's true.
What do you mean it's an
keep
asking?
Keep us up to.
That's no, it's under contract.
Oh,
at that price?
Yeah.
Good.
It's under contract.
How many square feet is that?
47.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's good news.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, good news.
So I think I could sell my house, if I wanted to, probably a little bit more.
Yeah,
that house was not renovated.
Would you sell?
Wow.
I would consider it, but I don't think I could find anything on the market remotely close to the house that I have for that price.
Yeah, that's true.
I would need to go like 2 to 3 mil to find a house that I like.
Yeah, and I would for you, Andre, because I know your situation, I wouldn't move until you find the one.
Yeah.
You know, for you, it just doesn't make sense. Maybe next year, you know, you find the one or 2024.
I would stay there. I love your place.
I like it too.
I love it. I think it's perfect for you. I think it's the ideal
place. It's not the one for him, though. I know it deep down. Yeah.
Only because the community is not the best for school zones and things like that. But otherwise, it's great.
Yeah, but school zones, I mean, you know, planning on having kids, aren't you?
Sure, in the future.
Yeah,
of course,
when?
Yeah.
But that's a long time between the time you have to have a kid and take him to school.
True.
Him? Yeah. You said he's going to have a him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Her. Him or her. Speaking about kids, yeah. Graham, you should have some kids because your weeds are out of control in
my
front
weeds.
Yard.
Oh, yeah.
I walked over and I was like, "It's you're going to, HOA is going to be on
what
you.
Did I? And what did I say, Graham? What did I say?
You know what's funny? Yeah. I got a story to tell. Okay. So I had, it was early in the morning and I was just like getting ready and hear a ring and a knock on the door. So I'm like, who is that? It's a weird hour. Open it up and Jeremy, it's your son. And he's trying to earn some cash.
No way.
And he says, hey, I'm willing to pull the weeds in your front yard. And I say, how much? He says, $100. And I'm like, how long is that going to take you? He's like, about 30 minutes. And so
Jeremy's
I said,
my boy.
Yeah. So I said, okay, 30 minutes. I'm like, you know, a dollar a minute seems about fair. And plus, you know, a little more. So I said, $35. That's my offer. He goes, 50. I say 35. And he goes, 50. It does not want to come down from 50. So I said, if you do it for 35, you got my business. But, just think about it. He's like, all right, I'll think about it.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So but stalemate.
Wait, so when was this?
About a week ago.
I think it was like
and now I'm going to hire a landscaping company and Graham is going to pay
$200.
Probably like 200, 250.
Yeah, but they're doing it. It's not just weeds. They're like trimming everything. Okay. The place, I have not had a gardener come in a year and a half.
Yeah. You didn't support a young entrepreneur.
Ooh.
How does that feel, man?
But you know what? But he
eats at you every day.
That's a great lesson that you have to be more flexible than that. You have to. if a customer is willing to, you know, here's the other thing he could have done too. He could have said, I'll take the 35, but I'll only do half the yard. Or like he should come up with an alternative. He can't always get yeses because that gives him an unrealistic expectation. He's got to learn how to handle objections and no's.
I think what he should have done is gone with 100, but he should have said, I'm going to pull and I'm going to spray so you get no weeds for six months.
Fertilizer. If he said,
don't want to fertilize them, but yeah.
No,
it's
no,
like
no,
the
but,
spray,
but
yeah.
around the, but around like the bushes and the trees.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
$50 and I'll throw in fertilizer.
Yeah.
I think he needs to learn how to handle objection because so far everything he's asked for, I've done it.
Jeremy, how old is he?
Yeah.
Seven.
So we're gonna Graham's like, he's got to learn that nothing is handed
we're gonna
to
bring him.
We're
going to bring him on for next episode of Millennial
Money. It's
going to
give him an unrealistic expectation of just like he could ask whatever he wants. People are going to say yes because it works now when he's young. When he's 7 years old, everyone's going to say yes. But watch, when he hits puberty and his voice starts dropping a little bit, then all of a sudden he's going to get some objections. He's going to be like, why are they just saying yes? But he'll know. He'll have the experience to be like, if I can negotiate with Graham, I could do anything.
Yep. I agree with that.
That's cool.
Yeah,
we could bring him on the morning of money. That would be interesting.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, he's a negotiator. I really like that about him.
Yeah.
Is that anything he'll want to negotiate? How much would you pay for that? I love it. Yeah. What if I did this? How much would you pay me for that? I really like that.
Every time he sees me, he's like, "Oh, magic man, do magic."
you should say, "How much would you pay me for
it?" Yeah,
that's
true. I should. Yeah. Ooh.
I'll teach you how to do a trick.
No,
for $10.
I'll say like, which Pokemon card do you want to give me? Because he collects Pokemon cards. I should barter with like that.
That would be smart. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Pokemon. What's going on Pokemon market? I haven't kept track lately.
It's going down.
Is it going down?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, man. So I check eBay for prices every now and then, and I'm
what
seeing,
do you look for?
First edition base set holos, and just I so always sort by ending soonest, and I just see what comes up. A lot of these are just straight up not selling anymore, or the prices that they're getting are 50% off what they used to.
Right,
man. Yeah.
Alternative assets fall the hardest.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I wish stocks could go up so I could buy another. I really want to get a jungle set. A booster box, and I want to get a fossil too.
Yeah,
so I could have the three from 99.
Yeah,
like that would be
cool,
man.
That'd be super.
That would be great. Yeah. Now would be a great time to buy the entire boxes if you can.
Yes,
this would be a perfect time because individual packs have gone down a decent amount. So to buy a box, you'd get a discount on top of that.
Yeah,
Graham, you actually tried to get me to buy a Tesla Roadster.
Oh, I did.
You did. So here's what happened. Yeah. We mentioned this last episode, right? But we didn't say what it was.
No, that was a different thing.
That was a different thing.
That was a different thing. But so we talked about the Tesla.
The Tesla Roadster, which was listed on Bring a Trailer.
Yep.
And it was Red Hot Chili Peppers, one of the band members.
Oh, no, this is... Okay, so let me take this back. This is what we were talking about. This is what we bleeped out. I didn't want to talk about it here because I knew that it's like a one-item thing, and so anybody watching this could bid on that one item.
Yeah, if someone was rich who could be watching this,
Right, but it was Fleas. So it's called a Signature 100 Tesla Roadster. It's the first 100 were given out to people, and they had an individual plaque. They had a plaque between the seats. This one was Flea's car. Yeah. And the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
So at the time that Graham mentioned it to me, it was at like $175,000-ish. Mm. And he's like, Andre, you should bid on it. I'm telling you, in 5 years, it's going to be worth $500,000. In 10 years, it's going to be $1 million. And I was like, dude, that's crazy. I was like, I imagine this car is going to easily go over $200,000.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it did.
And I told you.
But you made me an offer. You said that you would buy it from me anytime, no questions asked, back for $150,000.
I would do that still. Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, I'm basically giving you an insurance policy to have the car in my name so that anytime Graham could be like, I'm going to tap into that, get the car.
No, it's not a unilateral option. Basically, I said that in my opinion, I would pay up to $200,000 for the car and feel like it's a good deal. $220,000 would have been okay.
It sold for $212,000.
It sold for $212,000 plus there's a $5,000 fee on top of that for Bring a Trailer. So, you know, $217,000 plus shipping. It's going to be a $220,000 by the time you actually receive the car. To me, the car was worth $200,000-ish, or that would have been a fair price. But yeah, I would have paid you $150,000.
Yeah.
Just so you know that your worst case scenario ever is you lose 25% on the car. That's your worst case scenario, and I'll buy it at $150,000.
So I thought about this, and I was like, you know what? I don't know enough about cars to just put in such a huge amount of money. Like $200,000 is not a little. And because I don't know enough about the car market and about that car specifically, and I looked at a documentary about those Roadsters, and if you crash them or if anything happens, it's almost impossible to get parts.
But that's why you have insurance.
Yeah,
you have a stated insurance policy that says if something happens to your car, you get that value back.
True, but it's just like, another one. But there's no other one. You just lost the 100 edition. You can't replace that car. It's gone.
But that's why I have a stated value. So you could say that, you know, I paid $212,000 for this car, but I'm going to insure it at $280,000.
How do you get a fair value? Oh, so you're insuring it at a higher value then.
So, yeah. So
imagine you crash it at $280,000 and it's worth $400,000.
But that's why you have to keep track of values and adjust your insurance accordingly. Right. With the Ford GT, I originally insured that at a value of like $330,000. And after the year, I noticed, wait a second, the values are now $400,000. So then I insured it, I think around $400,000. And yeah, your insurance goes up a little bit, but at least I insure that no matter what happens, I get that value back.
Yeah. Do you really think it's going to be worth $500,000 in 5 years?
I do.
Wow.
I think certain cars will be worth it. I think the certain models with, you know, less desirable colors, higher miles, maybe not as well taken care of, less optioned. They call them the mid-range cars because you have like the Signature 100, then you have like the 200 to 500 range of the VINs that seem to get because there's quite a few of them.
Mm.
Those, I think, will rise at a slower pace. Mm. But I think the Signature 100, by far, I mean, there's only 100 of them.
At the end of the day, I never invested in it because to me, I didn't want to tie up more of my money into an illiquid asset. That's really what it came down to. Yeah. I just didn't want to have that money tied up into something I couldn't get out.
Yeah.
That's fine. That But I gave Jeremy a ride in this car the other night.
How was it?
It was fun. Way more fun than I thought it was going to be.
More fun than your Model S Plaid?
Well, I think so because of the convertible, man. It's just like you feel the air. It's just so fun.
And it probably corners way faster and it's better handling. Right?
That I don't know. Okay. But all I know is we had a good time. Okay. Yeah, it was amazing. So we probably depreciated it by $2,000 on that ride.
Oh, no, we didn't. No, but between the GT, the Ford GT and that car, the Tesla Roadster is, I want to say, 5 times more fun to drive.
Wow.
It is just nimble. So it's quick. You don't have to worry about it. You see everything. You feel the road. The experience is completely different. And that's the car I just want to take everywhere.
Right.
Like it makes you want to drive. The Ford GT, I like looking at it.
What would you say is your combined car portfolio value?
$590,000?
Something like that. I mean, let me look it up. I just got to get out the calculator.
I love the Graham mocking Graham's voice. Get out the calculator.
I'm surprised he doesn't have an app where it's like saved, you know, like appreciated this day. It's like 1% down, 2% down.
Oh, there must be an app like that.
If there's not, we should
Oh my gosh.
We should come up with that.
Yeah. How is that not a
625?
Whoa, 625. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, I have you at 590.
Did you ever think, is yours really?
No.
Oh, God.
He's guessing. He's guessing.
You never know with these people.
Yeah. No, it's an appraisal. Kind of like they jacked my appraisal on my house. I'm going to jack your appraisal on my car.
Wait, Graham. Like, so did you ever think like 5 years ago you would ever have a portfolio like that value?
No. I always thought that I wanted one daily driver, which would be like the Tesla Model 3, and then one sports car, like fun car to drive that would be a good value. And
for me, that's what I'm going through right now. Yeah. I'm just like, my Miata is my fun. I don't care what it's worth. So cool. And then my daily driver, the Model Y.
Yeah.
But I did that for a while with the Prius and a Lotus.
Yeah.
And that was like perfect. But no, but it's like some of this just accumulated over time. Like the Lotus I bought was just a good deal. So like I'd be irresponsible to say no to that. So I bought the car.
Would you ever sell anything?
I would sell the GT at the right price. If someone came to me and is like, hey, I'll give you $425,000 right now. It's cash. I'll be an easy buyer. Just I'll take it off your hands. I would do it.
Okay.
The DMs are open.
Yeah, no, seriously.
I DM me, I'll negotiate it, and then get a 2% fee on that.
I would do it. And the only reason why is because I'm too scared to drive it, just because it's like, it's too expensive. Mm. The Tesla, the same thing. The Tesla, I could take it out, and I really want the a super performance GT40, which is basically, you take the Ford GT. The original one was built in the 60s. It was a GT40. Now, the real ones are like $15 million. You have a real one. But Super Performance bought the rights to the GT40 name. Mm. And they make what's called a continuation of the GT40 with real parts. So it's actually a part of the GT40 registry. So it's a real GT40 made in today's time with like genuine parts.
That's the one you own.
No, I own the Ford GT.
Okay.
That was the commemorative, Ford GT.
But the new ones are worth more now.
The new ones are worth about $1 million. So you have three generations. The original, which is the GT40, the Ford GT, which is the one I have, and then the new Ford GT, which is like $1 million. But I really want the original Super Performance GT40, and I made a bid on one earlier today.
Oh, did you say it was $15 million?
The original one.
Oh, the original.
But not the Super Performance one.
Got it.
But there's one on Bring
It. How much are those?
The continuations range around $200,000.
Oh, okay.
But there was one on Bring a Trailer, and I thought, under $200,000, it was a good deal. So I figured, so I was bidding on it earlier today. Yeah.
Graham is buying cars faster than Sam is buying brokerages.
Oh, yeah, I didn't. I know, right? No, I didn't get the car. No, I think I bid up to like, I don't remember. I think it was like 165, 170, 170. I forget. It was some price around there. But I impulsively, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, just for fun. If I get it at this price, I may as well. And I bid that price. And then it ticked down and no one else bid after me. And I didn't fully think this through. And I'm like, because I don't have an extra garage space. And it kept going down. It got down to like 20 seconds. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, did I just buy this car like on a whim without even thinking about it? And then it got down to like 5 seconds. And I'm prepared to be like, I guess I'm buying the car. And then someone else bid.
Oh, my God.
So, and then I thought about it for a second. I'm like, I shouldn't be buying another one. And then it went over $200,000.
Wow.
And the reserve wasn't even met.
Jeez.
So yeah, so he didn't get his price. Yeah. But.
So you must have been listening to the master, Mr. 21 Savage, when he said in that song, "I got bored today, so I'm gonna just buy a car."
I haven't heard that song.
You haven't heard that song, okay?
But no. But
my
mentality is not with these cars just to like buy cars for cars, but if they're a good deal and they're a good value, I don't see the problem in that. Mm-hmm. This car, if you bought it new, there's a 2-year waiting list, and this car, fully optioned as it was, would cost you about $250,000. So it's 2 years and $250,000. Or if I bought one at like 180, buy it at 180. Like, I know I could drive that and sell it for 180.
Well, Alex, does your boss have an addiction? Like buying cars?
Not cars, but he likes buying things that have value that he thinks he's getting a good deal.
Well, you're scaring me there, because I asked if he had an addiction.
But I will say if there's one person that could maximize their ROI on cars, it's Graham.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
It's Graham for sure. Mm-hmm. Whereas like me, I just want to drive the car. I would not realize
that's
ROI.
That's why I told him about the Roadster. I'm like, dude, I would find a reason to like drive every single night if I had that car. Like, I would not get
Jeremy's too tall for the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The only way to drive it would. Yeah.
So if it flips over, you're just decapitated.
No. So it's kind of strange the way the car is positioned, but the windshield is lower than the roll bar in the back. So Jeremy's head is below the roll bar, but higher than the windshield.
Yeah.
So in a flip, his head would be okay, but you can't put the top on.
Right. Oh, okay, got it. Do you have the hard top on, or do you have it with you?
I have a soft top.
Okay. Yeah. It didn't come with the original.
No.
Okay. That's cool. Wow. That's Jeremy, would you... I know what you're going for. Oh, man.
What? Will I buy a car? No.
Yeah.
No. Stocks, man.
You got the Model S. You got the X.
Yeah.
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 And then you had the Alfa Romeo.
I did have the Alfa Romeo back in the day.
You sold it.
Yeah, I sold that. That was crazy because I sold that like the week they're about to shut like everything down. And I remember going into CarMax. And I was literally the only person in this massive CarMax in Henderson. That was right before they shut everything down. And I remember, you know, they had just probably 40 or 50 workers working. And I was literally the only human that wasn't a worker in this place. And I remember like thinking, shoot, man, like, you know, the auto business might be in a bad place for like years. And then who would have known? So, used cars. Yeah. I probably could have made more money if I would have just kept it and waited like a year and sold it then.
What did you sell it for? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Was it a profit or a loss?
A loss for sure. Yeah, it depreciated over time like cars used to do before.
Jeremy, you know what car you would love is the Alfa Romeo 4C.
I looked at that,
Graham.
I saw comparison videos between that and the Lotus, and the Lotus typically tends to be people's favorite.
Yes, because of the stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you could drive stick shift, you'd prefer a Lotus, but the Alfa Romeo 4C, I could see you driving that car. It's fantastic.
If I wasn't a Tesla guy, I would have two cars. The big boy Rolls, the SUV, and I would have one of the new Zs.
Sorry, when you say big boy Rolls, you mean like Rolls Cullinan. Royce? Or?
Yeah, the Cullinans.
Dude, would you really?
Yeah, what? For sure. I'd get one of those, and I would get one of the new, I don't know if they're 370 Zs or 390 Zs.
Yeah, the new Zs.
Yeah, because I used to have one of those. I used to love that car, and I would love to get one of the new ones. But
mine would be a Roadster for my fun car, and a Cybertruck for my daily.
Oh, a Cybertruck.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Just give me those two and I'm happy.
Black on black for the Cybertruck? Or didn't you not have an idea of that?
Wait, black on black?
Like, would you like wrap the truck black?
Oh, no, I love the steel.
You love the steel?
I love the steel, yeah.
Okay.
Isn't there, by the way, speaking of Tesla, a lawsuit brewing over Elon Musk, his claims on full self-driving?
Oh, I don't know. Is there?
There's been a lot of claims from him over the years. I don't... I mean, with Elon, there's so much stuff going on. It's like a full-time job trying to keep up with all the drama, man.
Yeah, well, his tweet is like, I'm going to hire an army of lawyers.
I know. I'm like, come on, Elon.
Do you remember
chill,
what that was
man.
About? It's just, he just...
Yeah, just, I mean, I think over the new allegations, you know, against him, something that happened in an airplane or something like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's always so much stuff.
Well, I thought on this, and I got to look it up, and maybe I'm misinformed, but that the lawsuit, or it was a proposed lawsuit or something, about Elon Musk claiming that Tesla full self-driving was going to be soon available and collecting money and deposits for a feature that is not yet available.
Right. That makes sense.
So, yeah.
Do you have the full self-driving unlocked yet, or?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I paid for it, I think, 2020 I paid for it. And, I mean, I regret it just because I never use it. Mm. But, you know.
Yeah. You never even use your Tesla in general.
Yeah, that's true. But
oh
you know
gosh,
what? But
that's
the
right.
auto,
the
but,
three.
But you know what? The autopilot is the same thing almost as full self-driving.
Would you ever get rid of your Tesla?
I'm attached to it. I guess I would.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I would, but it's sentimental because that to me is like
video,
$78 Tesla.
Yeah.
And when I bought that car, I was like, I'm just going to drive this until it doesn't run anymore.
Yeah.
But
give it to your dad or something.
I might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. But
you could always give it to me.
I could give it to Jeremy. Yeah.
Give it to his son.
Yeah, you'll have to negotiate
for
it.
For the weeds.
For the weeds.
Imagine lifetime landscaper membership. Like from now until he's 18, he's got to do your front yard, backyard.
I thought you were going to say 80 because he said lifetime.
Yeah, I know.
No.
Lifetime, yeah, 18. Let's hope his
childhood.
Yeah. I know where you were going. Like, let's say his lifetime is more than 18, please.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not say, you know, 18. But I got a good offer on the Tesla Model 3, if you make me an offer on a car, I'll entertain it.
I'll give you $10,000 right now for it.
Nice.
No, it would have to be over 55 on the Tesla, but it's, I don't know how many miles, 20 something, 22,000 miles on it, 2018, I believe it is. Yeah.
That's cool.
So with the full self-driving, by the way.
Make Graham an offer.
Make me an offer. It's a $78 Tesla.
MakeMeAnOffer.com.
And if someone happens to have a hookup at for a Corvette Z06,
oh,
that would be sick. Yeah. I love that car.
Lucky. Automotive Life might be able to make that happen for you.
That's true. Yeah. I'll ask Lucky. Wow. He's great.
Yeah.
Oh, the Z06 is so sick.
You're talking about the brand new one, right?
The new one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know two people that had one. Both of them sold for nice profits.
Oh, I believe
they
it.
Drove them for like 6 months. Plus.
I think there's one on eBay for like $1 million, something ridiculous. Oh, what the heck? Something ridiculous.
That's crazy. But yeah, both of them drove it for more than 6 months, and they both, I think, cashed out with like 10,000-15,000 profit. Wow. It's like, that's just like that's, you can't even like conceive that in the past. It's like you're guaranteed to lose money on a car.
And
like
dealers
that.
Are marking it up too.
Yeah. And now from what I'm hearing is some of these dealers are really getting screwed because some of these companies, like a Ford, from my understanding, is they're starting to build on demand.
Right.
So I don't know. That's
I miss the good
mess.
Old times when you had money, you could just be like, I want to buy this. Now it's not that.
Be like, oh yeah, we'll put you on the list. We'll call you.
Yeah. 2 years from now.
Yeah.
If we have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Some of these home builders are, it's like the opening signs of a little like a
crack.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we're noticing, me and a few others basically, we're on like the email list for some of these home builders, and some of them are starting to send out like incentives and things
Ooh.
Like that.
Yeah. Talking about like Blue Heron and
Not ones like that. And I'm talking like in Phoenix and in Vegas, okay. Like more normal home builders and like some incentives.
Blue Heron is like, we'll throw in free Carrera marble, buy in the next 24 hours, free heated floors. Come on down.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
We'll give you a 5-car garage for the price of 4. Yeah. Jeez.
That's funny. Alex, you're awfully quiet over there tonight. What's on your mind, Alex?
Nothing much, man. Honestly, I'm just soaking it in.
He's just zoning out.
I'm falling asleep.
I was falling asleep when I heard earnings or something like that earlier. Or no, inventory.
Right. I figured you'd be falling asleep. See, I was right. That was not as fun. I found it fun. I love it. But
yeah, Let us know if you enjoyed inventory in the comments. My audience, please come through on this. I'm counting on you guys, okay? Just, you don't need to say anything, just inventory.
Comment inventory comment down inventory. Below in the description if you found it interesting. Otherwise, comment,
I hate Jeremy.
You'll see a few of those.
Yeah. Oh, no.
We all will.
Kick him off.
Why is he on the podcast? He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Bring on anybody else.
My favorite. Where's Kevin? Kevin is here.
Oh,
bring back Kevin. Yeah.
You know what I thought that was really funny about last episode? Andre and Jeremy were getting flack about real estate. But you guys don't claim to be real estate agents, so I don't know what people were expecting.
What was the flack?
They were like, wow, Jeremy and Andre asked such basic questions. Like, they didn't know, you know, what this was. Oh, my God. But it's like, when was the last time Andre or Jeremy put out real estate
video? But Alex, we're also playing 4D chess because we ask questions not for ourselves, for people watching.
No,
some of the questions Jeremy asks, it's like, yeah, what is a mortgage?
Right.
And people are like, Jeremy doesn't know. Jeremy doesn't know what a mortgage is. Yeah, and a lot of times you'll ask questions that maybe the audience doesn't want, but you want them to explain it.
Yeah.
What is net cash flow?
What's
ROI
hard money.
Again?
Yeah, you're like, what is hard money? Is that like physical coins?
No. I was like, is that like
Jeremy is serious on that one. Yeah. That was a serious one.
Like silver or?
Yeah, I know about the hard money, man. It's hard to make money when hard money. Let me tell you that. Oh boy.
You just invest in hard money. You do not like it easy.
You guys want to hear my next money making scheme over here?
Oh.
Okay. Do you see this space right here? I'm going to rent this out.
That's smart.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So, guys, if you want to put something up here, I do have to vet it, and I have to make sure it's nice. Just DM me right here. You get about 1 foot by 2 foot.
You're giving us a cut, right?
You know what we should do, Alex?
What?
Alex, what we should do is put a screen there so it could rotate. So it's like a billboard.
That'd be cool.
One of those, like, mobile, you know, the billboards. Just put
it on TV. No, because I don't speak enough to make it worth it.
No,
so, like,
no, but
you'll get approximately, like, 3 minutes.
But every time,
time.
But every time you speak, Alex, just click a button, and then it's going to do the next one. So we could rent out multiple spaces per episode.
Oh, so you're trying to double duty or something like that? Okay. So, guys, DM me on Instagram. You know, I also produce the Iced Coffee Hour. you know, just throwing that out there. So
No. What you gonna do there, Alex? Oh, you're gonna put a whiteboard.
Yeah, the screen here too.
Yeah.
No. Okay, that's too much.
you're gonna put a whiteboard back there, Alex, and you're gonna say pre-sale wedding tickets. Fourth link in the description. Get them. Oh my! Hot.
No, the millennial money audience did not like that.
You know what's funny? We have two different audiences. We mentioned it on the Iced Coffee Hour. Nothing but praise. That's a great idea, Alex. And didn't you get like five people who bought a ticket?
I didn't sell any tickets, but they were like, hey, man, I got like six people. They were like, hey, as soon as you sell them, let me know. He's like, I want to come with me and my wife.
That's
it. And I'm like, so that's probably potentially, let's say not everybody has a partner, but let's say that's like eight tickets right there, something like that. So
yeah, it's interesting. So we got praise in the Iced Coffee Hour here. Nothing but just criticism. Yeah, totally different.
Huh.
Oh, so. We have the high net worth individuals on this channel that are just like...
Oh, you're confusing us with the Iced Coffee Hour. No. That's the other channel, Jeremy. right there.
I imagine your Iced Coffee Hour is more diverse than this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
It just made sense because a lot of people on the Iced Coffee Hour was like, what a great way to start a marriage. You can buy a house. You can do X. And then in millennial money, they're like,
well, you know what?
I can't believe you would sell tickets to such a precious moment in your life.
It's a little more, here we talk investing, whereas I could say Iced Coffee Hour, more entrepreneurial. Yes, like you think about like your Alex Hormozy episodes. And
well, this is entrepreneurial. I'm selling tickets. I'm making money.
Well, no. But on millennial money, it's investing oriented. That's entrepreneur oriented.
Okay.
So guys, if you are interested in buying tickets to Alex's potential wedding in the future, reach out to Alex, DM him, and just all you need to say, DM him with wedding tickets. That's it.
And I can hear the hate comments already, Graham.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. Just get ready for it. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for watching. Make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, hit the notification bell, and most importantly,
check out FTX link down below.
Exactly.
Peace out.
So thanks, guys.
Yeah. MFTX.
Spring. Nothing like the world progressing towards summer to inspire your own progress. That's what life's all about in your career, relationships, and your finances. Let's talk about that last one. With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa Credit Card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities for lower rates on loans, like for a car or home. Sounds like progress, right? With Chime's Secure Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.